that you, you know, you literally have researched it now from almost every angle.
It was basically, you know, when I'd been looking at stuff to do with the Disclosure Project, I came across some information which suggested that what happened on 9/11, you know, was basically not as we were told. And it mentioned this phrase of state-sponsored terrorism. Yeah. And I thought, well, I've never heard of that before. What does that mean? So I went and looked that up. And it basically then sort of took me into the area where it talked about governments, you know, funding terrorist groups and creating and setting up incidents. And I thought, oh, this is very strange. I'll have to do a bit more research into this because, you know, this is also another type of cover-up. You know, and I knew, having seen the Disclosure Project, that there was a big cover-up going on with the UFO information.
Absolutely.
It was really obvious once I'd seen that. Yeah. And so, yeah, I went through and followed that through a bit more. And eventually I found George Humphrey's film, which is called 9/11, The Great Illusion, which is obviously quite an interesting title, you know. And so I watched this film, and it was in that film, George Humphrey's 9/11, The Great Illusion, that it clearly showed that the towers came down too quickly to have come down just by gravity. So I thought, ah, let's go and check this out. And so I went back to my equations of motion, and I you know, put in the relevant figures into the equations of motion for the height of the Twin Towers. And very easy calculation if you know how to do it. And I came out with this figure of 9.2 seconds, I think it was. And I'm thinking, well, that's obviously not possible that the towers could have come down in 9.2 seconds because, you know, they've got all that structure to sort of, you know, come down, and there's just no way possible that that could have happened. So that kind of woke me up, you know, to the idea that my original view of 9/11, you know, I watched the towers coming down live. I saw it live here in the UK, and it was about sort of 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I think, our time, something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe a little later. Maybe it was 3. So, you know, this opened up the door, really, for me to go and re-examine 9/11, and I began to explore, you know, from there, really.
And when you first began to explore it, you know, being a physicist yourself, I mean, I'm sure that you totally rejected, you know, the ludicrous story that they have put out, you know, that two planes brought down these towers. But which area did you, I mean, there's so many different areas. You know, we've got the controlled demolition using the thermite, and we've got Dr. Judy Woods using, you know, something relating to the Hutchison effect, which I, you know, I'm not a scientist. I don't really understand it. But when you first started looking at it, how did you navigate it to where, you know, to where you are now in your belief right now?
Yeah, well, it was really starting off with the physical evidence, I suppose, or one aspect of that, which was the collapse of the towers themselves. And then I started to come across all the other information, you know, about the Pentagon, and I looked at that for a little bit. I think that was one of the first areas that I looked at, you know, and I realized that the hole wasn't big enough for the plane, and this sort of thing. Now, I might point out that I'm not actually a physicist. You know, my background really is in software development, and there's really only a couple of jobs that I've done in that where I've needed to sort of know the physics of something, you know. And that's not in any great depth. You know, and Dr. Wood herself, that we've mentioned, she deals with physics, but she's actually a specialist in material science, and her PhD is classed in being in mechanical engineering, of which she studies one branch. So I was trying to look at some of the physical evidence, and my emphasis was less on the sort of political side. But, you know, I think it was in 2004 I started writing some letters, and then I think it was mid-2004 that the first version of Loose Change was released. And so that brought in some of the history of 9/11 in that, for example, they showed in there one of these FEMA manuals, which had the World Trade Center in crosshairs, you know, on the cover, which I thought was very interesting. So I knew that this was quite a wide-ranging thing. 9/11 was important for a number of different reasons, you know, not just because of the anomalous physical evidence or the insider share dealing, you know, and some people dispute whether the insider share dealings actually did take place, you know. So, you know, I was exploring all the areas that I could to try and get a handle on things, but I was, you know, focusing more on the technical aspects because that was my sort of background, and I knew that I could comfortably argue technical points about, you know, the law of gravity and what was capable of happening and what wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And really, the next sort of stage, I suppose, came when I got invited to join this scholars group. You know, I joined the various sort of groups of people here in the UK, you know, and I went early 2006. We had a march in London, which we sort of latched onto the Stop the War campaign here. And I went to London and I, you know, gave out a few leaflets and discs and things. And that, I think, was the 18th of March 2006. And then, so around that time, I'd also got invited to join this scholars group, which was called Scholars for 9/11 Truth. And it was, interestingly enough, you know, this is where the sort of more detailed information, I think, starts coming out, because it was in 2005 in September that this character called Stephen E. Jones came onto the scene.
Yes.
And, everyone's heard of him. And he was a professor at Brigham Young University, and he'd come out with this paper which was to do with the destruction of the towers, which, of course, was my first area of interest. You know, that's the thing that grabbed my attention initially. So I thought, oh, this looks good, mm-hmm. because we've got this guy from Brigham Young. He's a physicist. He's a doctor of physics. And he's coming out with this study of how the towers were destroyed. So it's got to be a good thing. You know, I was thinking he's an academic. He's had some published research. So I'm thinking, yes, you know, things are finally changing. We're getting somewhere now. And so I was invited by him and Dr. Jim Fetzer. I was invited to join this Scholars for 9/11 Truth. And I thought, oh, great, you know, I don't know why they're inviting me, because I haven't got any, you know, published papers. I've never done any peer-reviewed research. You know, I don't make any claims about this. I posted a few things on the web and this sort of thing, you know, and written a few letters, but I certainly haven't had any academic papers of any kind published, let alone in relation to 9/11. And Steve Jones sent this paper around to members of the scholars group for sort of a few points to be raised, and I raised a couple of very minor points. And it looked fine, you know, as far as I was concerned, it looked fine. And I was quite pleased that somebody was doing this, you know. And so following that, I explored this idea of them using thermite to destroy the towers, and I thought, oh, yeah, well, we've got this film, you know, we can see the molten metal coming out in this film, and that all seems fairly reasonable. But then I got interested in Morgan Reynolds' work initially, and Professor Morgan Reynolds was at Texas A&M, and he'd come out criticizing, you know, the official story of 9/11, and he published this paper on the scholars group, and it was called We Have Some Holes in the Plane Stories. I think that was the title or name, mm-hmm. similar to that. And that was published with a guy called Rick Rajter, or Rick Reiter. I forget how to pronounce his surname. It's Rajter. And they were looking at this idea that it wasn't planes at the World Trade Center, and I'm thinking, oh, this is strange, because we've got all these videos and all these witnesses saying that they hit these planes. This, for somebody like Morgan Reynolds to be coming out with this is really strange. But it took me a while to actually get round to reading it. It took me probably 6 months before I properly read through Morgan Reynolds' work, because I was actually busy reading all the attacks on Morgan Reynolds, because he was attacked for this paper, saying, oh, it's, you know, a ridiculous idea. When I actually read the paper, I realized that what he said was very simple in terms of the planes hitting the towers. The holes were the wrong size. If you take, for example, Newton's third law, which is to every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. In other words, if you have a plane hitting a building at 500 miles an hour, if you reverse the frame of reference, it's the same as a building hitting a plane at 500 miles an hour. And if you imagine a World Trade Center tower crashing through an airport at 500 miles an hour, you imagine the damage that that would cause to the planes, and yet it was the tower that was damaged significantly, and the plane apparently wasn't. If you look at these videos, you can literally see the plane entering the building undamaged. And so again, I began to look at this more critically, in the same way that I looked at the collapse of the towers more critically, and I realized that these people were actually correct.
So in other words, what he was saying is that the plane should not have been able to go through the building. It should have sort of smashed and fallen down the side of the building?
Correct. That's exactly what it should have done. And particularly if you think of one of the supposed plane impacts, because if the plane is coming at an angle, be it a slightly vertical angle or a, you know, slightly horizontal angle, and not exactly 100% face on to the towers, then there's going to be like a, you imagine a car, you know, going into what we call a crash barrier at the side of a road.
Mm-hmm.
And what will the car often do? The car will often spin round and round and round because the impact happens at an angle, and that causes the forces on the car to make it turn in a circle, you know, and spin round and round and round. And you could see this, you know, on these Indy 500 races or whatever it is. You can clearly observe this. And yet this didn't happen with the plane. The plane is, the tube of the plane is very weak. You know, we know that if you look out of the plane's window, they have these signs on the wings saying no step, which is a reminder to people to not step on the wings, because the wings are very fragile.
Right.
So how can you have fragile wings making a plane-shaped hole in steel girders? Because we know that the outer structure of the tower was 236 steel girders. I think they were like 3-inch thick steel.
And, you know, if people just think about the Pentagon, you know, the official story that we're supposed to believe is that when the plane went into the Pentagon, the wings were left outside somewhere, which we never saw.
Yes.
And so the two stories should be similar, but they're not.
Correct. And people have tried to argue for no plane at the Pentagon, but then curiously some people have not applied the same sorts of physical arguments on physical evidence for the towers. So that was when I started to get familiar with you know, Morgan Reynolds' work, and I began to study that more and more over time, because I hadn't really looked at what was called the no plane theory. I hadn't dismissed it. I just hadn't looked at the evidence because, you know, I knew everything was pretty weird, so I knew I shouldn't dismiss it because nothing was looking, you know, everything was different to how it initially looked. I'd already discovered enough to tell me that, you know. And then, as part and parcel of looking at Morgan Reynolds' papers, Professor Morgan Reynolds' papers, I came across Dr. Judy Wood. And she'd essentially posted a critique of what Stephen Jones has put on the table, in terms of one of the arguments which Jones had used in his paper, which I'd read, was that we had this film of the towers, and there was this molten metal coming out of the towers on this film, supposedly. And Jones was claiming that this material dripping down from the tower had to be molten iron. And the reason why I said it had to be molten iron was, if you take aluminium, molten aluminium, which we know the exterior of the towers was aluminium, if you heat that up, he says that aluminium is liquid at all temperatures in daylight conditions. In other words, because we saw this orangey-yellowy material, it couldn't have been aluminium, because it would have been silvery. Now, Dr. Wood's paper essentially proves that this is not true, and it's a known fact. In other words, if you heat up aluminium to 600 degrees centigrade, you know, which is just above its melting point, it will look silvery. Fair enough, you know, no problem. But if you continue to heat it up to 1400, then it will glow. So this is the basic bit of evidence which was incorrect in terms of what Steve Jones was saying. And doctor would have posted a study of this on her website at the time, and I read through this, and I realized there was something seriously wrong here. So I then began to look more critically at the thermite sort of study. And the reason why Stephen Jones had said it was molten iron is that molten iron
now,
is...
Now, Andrew, what? Hold on. We'll come right back to this exact spot.
Okay.
We're talking with Andrew Johnson. He's calling in from England, and we're talking about 9/11 and all the different theories that have been put out and what's discredited and what isn't, and we'll be right back here on Radio RNN on the Micro Effect Broadcast Network. You are listening to Radio RNN. My name is Raylan Allen. I'm the publisher of Rumor Mill News. You can go over there and check out some of our latest headlines. Just go right into the reading room. It's rumormillnews.com. You'll see a link directly to the reading room, and that's where all of our breaking stories are. We're talking with Andrew Johnson, and we're talking about 9/11. And tomorrow is September 1st, and it's just a few days until we get to 9/11 in 2009. And we had just left him. He was talking about Stephen Jones, who's the professor at Brigham Young, and probably the best known of all of the 9/11 researchers. And Andrew was just explaining to us how Professor Jones said that the orangish molten metal had to be iron rather than aluminum. And was it Dr. Judy Wood that proved to us that it could be aluminum?
Yeah, I mean, she didn't say it was exactly aluminium. She just said it wasn't necessarily molten iron.
Okay.
As Jones was claiming. You know, she was basically saying that he didn't have enough evidence to say that.
Mm-hmm.
But this actually whole raging debate, which still rages even today, you know, sort of 3 years after this was first posted.
Yeah, back in 1996.
Well, this is 2006. And it's still people are debating this on forums. And, you know, I've got YouTube videos up there now, and they're still putting this same thing down over and over and over again. But it covers up a much more important point, which is much more obvious and completely, you know, really proves that any idea that it was there was molten metal as the towers came down of any significant amount is ridiculous. You know, I mean, I'll come on to this a little bit later, but basically, you know, my position at that point was that there was a critique of Jones, and it was a valid one. And it took me a while to digest that, but then I found more of Dr. Wood's work. I think she had a tripod website, which was one of these free, you know, website operators where they just give you, you know, 20 megabytes of space or something or whatever it was. And she got all her stuff posted there and a few other free places. So, and then it turns out that Dr. Wood had been working on her own sort of studies, and she'd come to the conclusion that having looked at much more evidence than anyone else, that some type of directed energy weapon was involved in the destruction of the towers. And I started to get interested in this because I think, you know, the sorts of things I was getting interested in was A, the energy connection, which I'd been researching as part of the Disclosure Project, you see, because I'd already, one of the prongs of the Disclosure Project was to do with free energy, this idea that we can get energy without burning fossil fuel in a usable form. And this was one of Stephen Greer's big hobby horses. And so I was already familiar with that, and so we were getting into this energy question. And then sometime after I'd seen Dr. Wood's critique of this aluminium issue, I found out that Stephen Jones had been involved in cold fusion research. And in fact, it was Jones who had precipitated the press conference by Pons and Fleischmann in 1989. You know, going off into a bit of a different area here, but it's hugely, hugely important for people to see this, research it, and understand it. In fact, it's a key to understanding the whole of 9/11. Now, Stephen E. Jones did a paper, and he, you know, he makes no secret of this. He talks about, he's talked about it on the Alex Jones show and things. He did a paper on something called muon-catalyzed cold fusion. That was, I don't know if that was the formal title of his paper, but that was how he has described it. Now, just to, you know, try and describe what cold fusion is, there's this holy grail in physics. One of the holy grails in conventional physics is fusion power. We have two types of nuclear power. We have fission power and we have fusion power. Now, the nuclear reactors, which are around the world and are very much a problem as with regard to the radioactive waste that they produce, they're all fission reactors. In other words, you take a material, which is uranium, and I think it's the 235, which is the radioactive element. An atom of uranium will spontaneously break apart into two smaller atoms, and in that breaking, it will release a small amount of energy. And if you collect the uranium together and purify it, and then you put it into a huge blob, and it's called the critical mass, then it will produce a self-sustaining reaction. In fact, it will be a chain reaction. And this is the principle on which all nuclear reactors and nuclear fission bombs are based. So the problems are with nuclear fission power is it produces very toxic exhaust, if you will, the radioactive waste. Excuse me. And what Pons and Fleischmann came up with was a tabletop method for producing nuclear energy, or that's what it initially looked like. Now, they've been researching this for about 5 years before they came and had this press conference. And the reason they had a press conference is because Steve Jones published his paper about muon-catalyzed cold fusion just before they were about to publish their research, and they wanted to get the attention on their research because they've been working on it for such a long time. And what they had found is that they had got more heat coming out of their experiment in certain circumstances than they had put in. In other words, they appeared to be getting energy from nowhere under certain circumstances. And the key thing with what Jones has said is he didn't get this. He got a fusion-type effect, a nuclear fusion-type effect, but it was very small-scale, and there was no real useful energy which came out. And he went on to basically help to round up people to criticize Pons and Fleischmann over their research. You know, that sounds like quite a bold claim, but this sort of is documented in Dr. Eugene Mallow's book. Dr. Eugene Mallow is another figure who's important in this story. There's articles on my website documenting this.
You might mention how he was killed.
Yes, indeed.
Let's come back and we'll talk about Dr. Eugene Mallow. You're listening to Rumor Mill News. We're talking about 9/11. We're talking about many different theories, and hopefully we will cut through to the truth here with Andrew Johnson. We'll be right back on the Micro Effect Radio Network. You are listening to Radio RMN, and we are talking with Andrew Johnson. And we're talking about 9/11 and all the different theories of 9/11. And he was mentioning that he had discovered that Stephen Jones was associated with cold fusion. And we were just getting into Dr. Eugene Maloff, who was murdered rather mysteriously in 2004. And I think that I'll just let you take it up. Dr. Maloff also believed that cold fusion could work. And so what were you associating Dr. Maloff and Stephen Jones for?
Yes, indeed. We discovered this connection, and then it was pointed out to me by someone that Dr. Mallow had written this book, which is called Fire from Ice. I believe it's out of print now, but you can track down some copies. It was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. The book's called Fire from Ice.
Mm-hmm.
I have a hardback copy. And if you look in the index, St- Stephen Jones is mentioned on 100 pages of that book.
Uh-huh.
So that means he was heavily involved in cold fusion research. And we have an audio recording of Jones from 1989 where somebody asks him, basically they ask him the question of, you know, do you think we'll ever be able to get usable energy from cold fusion reactions or cold fusion cells? And he basically says, no, you know, read my lips, no. It's a very emphatic no response. So to see him connected in this way with cold fusion, I was starting to see some parallels. And in fact, somebody else wrote an article about this. I can't remember who it was, whether it was a chap called Russ Gerst or C.B. Brooklyn, that put an article together about this, that what we got was a parallel between cold fusion research and 9/11 research. Jones was involved in both, and in both he was adopting what we call a limited hangout situation. And Jones didn't say cold fusion was impossible, and Jones hasn't said that Al-Qaeda did 9/11, if you see what I mean. In other words, he's going away from the official story of 9/11, and he's going away from the official story of physics, which is that you cannot get fusion without huge levels of input energy first. He was going away from that, but he wasn't allowing people to think that you could get excess heat from cold fusion. So we'd seen these parallels, and we got the energy connection. Jones worked for Los Alamos National Laboratories, which developed the A-bomb. They had a lot of black projects sort of associated with them as well. And in fact, some people have called the 9/11 Truth Movement, the Los Alamos 9/11 Truth Movement. It's not a term I've used, but I can sort of understand why some people have used it, I think. And as you mentioned there in the introduction to this segment, Malev was indeed murdered in 2004. 17th of May. He had a coast-to-coast appearance about 3 months before that. And that's available on my website if people want to go and find that and listen to it. It's a very interesting broadcast. Malev basically left his job at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, where he was the lead science writer. Because he found out that Massachusetts Institute of Technology did actually reproduce the excess heat when they tried to reproduce Pons and Fleischmann's experiment. But they essentially fudged their data to hide it, because Malev had to read this report they'd written, and he worked out what they'd actually done. And it was at that time that he realized it was time for him to leave, and he left MIT, I think, in 89 or 1990, sometime around then. And he founded the New Energy, I think it was called the New Energy Foundation, and he was trying to get scientists together and fund research and develop, you know, the cold fusion experiments into some new type of power system. So he was very involved in all of that, and I believe he was about to make a presentation to a congressional hearing. I can't remember the details of that. It's something I'd have to check out. But around the time he was murdered, supposedly in a botched burglary, where he was visiting his mother's house at the time, and he was supposedly involved in a botched burglary. As I said, around that time, he was supposed to be giving presentations to a congressional committee of some kind, science committee or something like that. So that was very strange.
And they still have not found his murderer. They arrested two men, but those charges were dismissed, and so finally the state of Connecticut is offering a $50,000 reward leading to the arrest and conviction of the person or persons responsible for his murder. So it seems that somebody whose reputation was as far and wide as Dr. Maloff's, you would think they would be able to find his murderer. In my opinion, you know, they sent in some government assassin, you know, to make it look like a botched robbery. And then that assassin could have been on a plane back to, Yugoslavia or South Africa, before the police even got there.
These are the sorts of scenarios that, yeah, that's what you're looking at. You know, I mean, obviously, we know that we can't prove that, but that's on the surface, you know, what it looks like.
Right.
You know, so moving on from that sort of area of discovery, really.
I wanted to ask you why you felt that it was important that Stephen Jones' connection to cold fusion, why you mentioned that. Why is that important in regards to 9/11?
Because what eventually comes out of this is that the cover-up of 9/11 is as much about the cover-up as free energy as also it is about creating the fake war on terror and everything that goes on that. 9/11 is the linchpin for so much that is going on, not just in terms of, you know, the police state and the New World Order and all that sort of thing, but it's also the linchpin in terms of free energy. And this is what I came on to discover with more evidence.
In other words, I'm leaping forward quite a bit, but if you are saying that 9/11 is the connector between all of, you know, between all of the conspiracies and free energy, you must be thinking that one of these free energy machines was used in 9/11?
Essentially, yes. Yes, essentially.
Okay.
I was already suspicious at that time that it was involved, and you know, when around this time we'd found out about, you know, the connection to cold fusion with Stephen E. Jones. I already knew about Malov because I'd known of him since 2004. You know, I read the stories when they came out about his murder, having mm-hmm. listened to him a few weeks previously on Coast to Coast. So I already knew about all that. But then another connection came along, which was, again, a tragic connection, because Dr. Judy Wood, who'd done this study with molten aluminium, she was actually received death threats around this time, and she set this demonstration up with one of her students, one of her graduate students, and he was called Michael Zabur. Around the time they were working on this demonstration of the molten aluminium, which you can find, there's a paper on Dr. Wood's website about that, and some of the pictures, I believe, were taken by Michael Zabur that were used in that demonstration. Basically, what ended up, about a couple of weeks after they posted this paper, Michael Zabur was murdered. So one of the students that had participated in putting this short demonstration together and posting it on the internet was murdered. And it turns out that Michael Zabur had an uncle, and the uncle of Michael Zabur is William Zabur. And William Zabur worked with Dr. Eugene Malov on the New Energy Foundation. In fact, I think he was a co-editor of one of the newsletters or the journals that they produced. So we had a very close connection there between cold fusion, Dr. Judy Wood, and 9/11.
Right.
And Michael Zabur was murdered in a apparently a botched mugging, and it was in the presence of his mother.
So in other words, Malov and this fellow were both murdered, by botched muggings or botched robberies.
Correct.
Boy.
Correct.
Sounds like a pattern to me.
Exactly. You know, at that time I hadn't really got in touch with Dr. Wood in person, but, I'd seen the postings and I'd heard we were all talking about what you and I had just been talking about on the various forums and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Although Michael Zabur's murder wasn't really spoken about that much outside a small group of people. There were some postings on Eric Hufschmid's website and on Daryl Bradford Smith's website and a few places like that, but it wasn't that widely discussed. So that really happened, I think that was April 2006, I believe. I should remember the date better, but it was around that time, I believe. So we went on from there, and I began to realize when I'd looked at Dr. Wood's studies that she'd come across a very basic observation which I'd missed. And I later, you know, sort of regretted how badly I'd missed this. And that the basic observation was this, and this is also to do with energy, ultimately, is that a lot of the steel in the World Trade Center turned to dust. Mm-hmm. So in other words, it didn't vaporize, it didn't melt, it didn't burn, it actually did turn to dust. And you can see this in the videos if you watch it clearly. You know, people have to understand that the World Trade Center steel, there were 236 exterior columns of steel. And in the center, there were 47 huge steel columns, which formed the main strength of the building. And you hear people saying, oh, the towers are mostly full of air, that's why they fell down. And there's one guy keeps posting everywhere, it had a concrete core and all this sort of thing. But we know that there were huge steel columns throughout the tower structure. And you look after the towers came down, and there is very little of it left. You've got a few lying on the ground. And these were the pictures that Judy Wood had put on her website, just very simple, basic things. She has a very simple, basic question: where did the material go? Now, I don't know about you, but I don't know of any method of turning steel to dust apart from using a file to file it down. Because if you try and put thermite onto steel, it will melt through it and just slice through parts of it where the thermite, you know, is placed on the beam. If you try and put a bomb on it, it will explode into chunks, you know, whatever size chunks. If you put a big, powerful explosive, it might sort of break it into, I don't know, coin-sized chunks or something. But it doesn't turn it to dust.
No, I think we all realize that. We just aren't scientists, and so we can't quite figure out how it happened.
That's a very good point. You know, you've got to really look at the pictures and forget everything you've learned about 9/11. You know, and this is, you don't have to worry about the exercises on 9/11 or whether Bush, you know, saw something on TV or he didn't or any of that. You just literally look at the original news videos, you look at the still images, and you can actually see, if you look carefully enough, as Dr. Wood has done, that you can even see in some of the pictures, as the steel is coming down from the top of the tower to the bottom, some of it is turning to dust in midair. And when you look at that and you see the evidence and you understand it, then you're dumbfounded because you have to say, well, what can do that? We don't know of anything that can do that. Thermite can't do that. So any debate about, you know, the temperature of molten aluminium becomes essentially redundant because you have to explain how the steel columns turn to dust. It's a very simple, basic bit of evidence that needs to be explained. And I've got an audio recording of Stephen Jones being challenged over this. He was on a radio program in January 2007. And he denies that the steel turned to dust. He just denies it. In the same way that the 9/11 Commission denied evidence, which was plain as day. You know, so we have people who are denying very basic, observable, provable, verifiable evidence, which is plain in your face. All you have to do is have your eyes open to seeing it, and then you have to go after an explanation. And then, as Dr. Wood has put it, you have to establish what happened before you can go on from there. You have to sort of say, you know, did the steel turn to dust or didn't it? And if it did turn to dust, then you're looking at something different to if it was just broken into large chunks and we had, you know, a huge pack of, huge pile of girders at the bottom, which we didn't see. And if you go on to Dr. Wood's Directed Energy Weapons Study, you can see all the pictures laid out. I've made these short videos. You know, if you Google 9/11 key evidence video, Andrew Johnson or something like that, you'll get the videos up that I've made, which is like 20 minutes long, and you can see these very basic pieces of evidence and look at them and see what you think yourself. You know, you can tell that I'm not just making this up. You can go and look at it. So, you know, I then began to realize that Stephen Jones was essentially, you know, running what I think I've called an intellectual herding operation. He seemed to be trying to gather around people who had some type of intellectual credentials and get them on the bandwagon of saying it was only thermite that it could have done 9/11. Yeah, and then he starts changing it.
We call them containment. In the intelligence world, they're called containment officers.
Right.
They contain the conspiracy in this little ball over here, and all of the experts are supposed to agree upon it because they don't want you to look anywhere else.
Yeah.
You are right. Dr. Judy Wood, on her website, nomoregames.net.
That's Morgan Reynolds, yeah.
Oh, is that Morgan Reynolds?
Nomoregames.net is Morgan Reynolds, yeah.
Okay, so nomoregames.net. And you can actually see the steel beams turning to dust. He's got a picture of a water tower there, and it's just amazing.
Yes, correct. And if you look at, that's one of the key pictures. We've got that, I think that sequence shot from two places. There's a sequence of about five pictures where you can see a 70-story high section of steel literally turns to dust before your eyes.
Yeah.
So what we're looking at there is unconventional technology. And again, this tied me back into the disclosure project because, you know, we'd found out about the testimony from people who had worked on black technology, these different types of weapon systems, possibly reverse engineered stuff, which is what I at that time thought. I thought it was some back engineered alien technology at that, when I initially came across this. I didn't really post that publicly, but that was what I was thinking privately. But then we later discovered that we didn't need to go into that area because we had all the evidence we needed to show what technology was used, and that evidence became available thanks to Dr. Wood's study. She'd actually got all the evidence to show what technology was used or what class of technology was used, but she hadn't kind of, you know, put the puzzle pieces in the right order yet. And that was really the sort of where I started to get involved, because we'd had all these attacks on Dr. Wood throughout 2007, saying that this directed energy weapon was a ray beam from space. It was a space laser. It was a laser, a maser, a plasmoid. No, it wasn't any of that. It was a directed energy weapon of a type unknown. So, you know, Judy would have pieced together all the evidence, and I kind of got involved because I think we just ended up exchanging email, I think, over this Jones issue with the Cold Fusion. And I wrote an article where I documented how the 9/11 scholars group was then split into Steve Jones's side and Jim Fetzer's side. And I was originally on Jim Fetzer's side, because I knew that Jones was being dishonest, basically, at that point.
Well, what I find really amazing is how even the Internet has kept Dr. Judy Woods and Morgan Reynolds' work. I mean, you know, it's like it isn't anywhere. You know, we posted a little bit back in, I guess, 2006 when this came out. But, you know, I'll make you a bet that nobody in my audience, well, maybe a few, have heard of Dr. Judy Wood and even less have heard of Morgan Reynolds. And so the fact that their names aren't out there, you know, they're not on shows, they're not on radio shows, it's quite amazing.
You're absolutely right, of course. And they've really done the most in terms of, you know, you look at a group like Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and I made this point on another radio broadcast I was on a few weeks ago, and we've got this supposed group of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. They believe that planes struck the towers, even though it's physically impossible for that to have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they have 700 members, and they're calling for a new investigation into 9/11. Here we are, you know, almost 8 years after the event. The government won't do anything. No organizations that have any paid-up members have spoken out about 9/11. The church hasn't spoken out about it. You know, our Amnesty International hasn't spoken out about it. Nobody has spoken out about it. And these people are expected to do an investigation. But what none of them will mention is the independent investigations carried out already and done and submitted in legal documents by Dr. Judy Wood and Dr. Morgan Reynolds. They've already done their own investigation into an aspect of 9/11. They've submitted the evidence to a court and they've had a result. Now, the fact that the judges dismissed the case is obviously, you know, almost to be expected, really, because
of
the way that these things, you know, unfold. But nevertheless, there is no commentary about this on the Internet, and there is no suggestion of, well, you know, Dr. Wood and Dr. Morgan Reynolds, they submitted these legal cases, and they didn't work, so let's see what they did wrong, you know. Let's try and, you know, look at their data, look at how they submitted it, and see if we can do it better to make it succeed. You know, you never get any of that talk. And so that's a sort of slight diversion there. But it really annoys me that if people want a positive outcome to this, it's very easy to sit around and criticise and say, oh, well, that's silly, you know, and you're ridiculous. It's much harder to actually come up with some constructive work and do something.
I know these government task forces, you know, that are supposed to look into things. I've been part of two October Surprise task forces that have all of the information right in front of them proving that, you know, Bush and Reagan, you know, made a deal with the Iranians to hold the hostages. And yet, you know, they at the end of it, they claim, we could find no evidence whatsoever supporting the theory that the Reagan administration negotiated with the Iranians. And, the trouble is, the Democrats and the Republicans are both in on covering up the crimes of whoever. I mean, I personally don't think George Bush is smart enough to have even been a part of, bringing down the trade powers. I actually think that it's my personal opinion is it is a worldwide cabal that deals in fraud and murder and terrorism and, you know, around the world. If you've read David Hawkins' papers, and I don't think he's actually said that they are the ones that are behind this, but this group, this cabal out of Chicago, has everything they need to have taken, to have done this. And I know of no other cabal in the world. I mean, this is a major worldwide cabal. But, my point is, our government, there's no one here in the United States that would do a real investigation. I mean, even if you got some of our rich people like, Bill Gates or Ross Perot, they've been threatened. You know, if we do any type of investigation, these people will end up dead. And they all know it.
Absolutely.
And you hear the music. We're talking about, another investigation into 9/11. I'm talking with Andrew Johnson, and we're talking about different things that you probably are not aware of. And we'll be right back here on Radio RNN on the MicroEffect Broadcast Network. And you are listening to Radio RNN. This is Raylan Allen, and I'm talking with Andrew Johnson, and we're talking about 9/11 and the various stories that have been put out about it. And, of course, I think many of us, really, we know in our hearts that we've been lied to, but we just don't know what the true story is. I do have a couple of listeners who have questions for you, and then I have a listener on the line who wants to ask you some questions. Have you finished laying out your, the groundwork for the discussion yet?
Well, I think we'll probably just fast forward a little bit.
Okay.
Because we've got this energy connection, so I just really want to sort of go on a little bit onto that before perhaps take some of the callers.
Okay.
Because I'd sort of got in touch with Dr. Wood, and we started to sort of discuss various things. And what she ended up showing me was a set of evidence which was to do with various effects that she'd seen, and one of which was called interference, and you'll see some of this if you go and look for it. It's called Toasted Cars. If you Google Toasted Cars and Dr. Judy Wood, you'll find pages where she's got these pictures of the anomalous damage on these cars. There were 1,400 cars near the World Trade Center which were anomalously damaged. And she recognized certain patterns within this damage, which gave her certain information. And that led us ultimately to something called the Hutchison effect, which is actually an interference effect. And this is also a way of seemingly getting energy coming out of nowhere. And this was a technique which was developed by a Canadian researcher called John Hutchison. And he did some experiments in the 1980s, and he found that he was able to jellyfy metal, make copper beams bend into a horseshoe shape. He had bits of metal turning to dust. He had things levitating. And we then found, or Dr. Wood rather found, and she showed me the evidence that she found, that we got all these things in the evidence at the World Trade Center too. We had cars which were inverted. We had beams which NIST had kept, which were bent into a horseshoe shape. We saw the steel turn to dust. And we had another factor, which was spontaneous fires. We got these weird fires. We have metal, which was glowing. But this is why we think they wanted to cover up the molten metal, because this was actually one of the side effects of the Hutchinson effect, where we could get molten metal, but it wasn't actually hot. The metal had been melted by a different method, some type of nuclear process. So this really brought us on to the connection with the Hutchinson effect, and then we were attacked for posting this. People that had been previously supportive to us, in other words, Jim Fetzer, and somebody called Ace Baker, who were other researchers, started to attack Dr. Wood primarily, and they attacked me sort of to a lesser extent for posting the evidence that there was a very strong correspondence between what was known as the Hutchinson effect and what was seen in the World Trade Center. And these attacks have continued since January 2008, when we went on to a radio show in Washington, D.C., and I went over to, you know, to the studio, and I spent some time at Ground Zero as well in 2008, and we, you know, we put all that out there basically. And then just you know, before we go on to the callers, of course, the other thing that Dr. Wood then discovered, as she was looking more at the evidence, was Hurricane Erin, and Hurricane Erin, we understand it must have played some kind of role in the events of 9/11. We're not entirely sure what it is,
And Hurricane Erin. It's like nobody ever even knew there was a hurricane right next to New York, right at the time.
Correct.
I mean, it's just unbelievable that nobody's ever... I hadn't even heard of Hurricane Erin until, you know, maybe a couple of weeks ago.
Right. You know, so we can see how effective the cover-up has been, because the argument I present to people with the hurricane, well, we've got two possibilities. The hurricane being there was a coincidence, or it wasn't a coincidence. If it was a coincidence, then it was a Category 3 storm at its strongest. It posed a risk to the East Coast. It had been moving since about the 7th of September up from Bermuda, but it was barely reported. We got a report on CNN from Bermuda that it would cause some damage there, and they said, it's no problem, it's going out to sea, don't worry about it. And it was going out to sea all right, but it went in a straight line towards New York City, and it was closest to New York at 8 o'clock in the morning on 9/11, and then the next day it made a right-hand turn and went out towards Newfoundland. So if you look at the path, you look at the data, you look at Dr. Wood's Erin study, she's got about 10 very detailed pages with the charts and the weather data and all this stuff that she's collected, and it looks very much as if Hurricane Erin did play some kind of role. So that then ties together, we've got the connection to energy, 9/11, and we've got the connection to what looks like, to me, very much weather control as well.
Now, Stephen Jones doesn't talk anything about Hurricane Erin. He doesn't talk anything about, you know, energy weapons, beam weapons. And neither does this guy that, you know, works for the architect, you know, is the architect, and it's Architects Against 9/11. And, you know, I'm wondering, have you actually confronted Stephen Jones or this other fellow who, you know, Stephen Jones has his version, the architect has his version, Alex Jones has his version, you know, the guys that did, the very first one, I can't even think about it right now. But you know, everybody has their own version. And it seems to me that people like Morgan Reynolds and Judy Woods have been silenced, and you've probably been silenced too. But how is it working? I don't understand it. How is it working that Stephen Jones' version is the one that is the one that many websites, many talk show hosts, all of these people that they embrace? I mean, Can all of these people be government agents?
Well, I think it's a mixture of reasons, really. It's a very good question, and it's one that we've tried to answer ourselves, you know, kind of, you know, like, what are we doing wrong? You know, we've got all the evidence. We've posted all the evidence. It's all available for public scrutiny. You know, none of this that I've told you has come from, you know, government insiders. We haven't been given any special information. We've been given no special reports. The website that Dr. Wood has put together, it's all, you know, come from data which is on other websites, such as the NOAA website for the weather data and all this. So I think that there's a number of reasons. Some of it is obviously the intelligence services are very hard at work shaping the whole 9/11 truth movement. That
exactly.
Has become very clear to me.
Yeah.
But also the scale that we're looking at now, if we're talking about an energy cover-up and a weather control cover-up, it's just too big for a lot of people to handle. They're much happier with this conventional idea of the government did it, the government planted bombs, or the government planted thermite. It's much easier for people to digest that as an alternative conspiracy theory. So I think that's part of it. The people will get an explanation which they think fits, and then they'll be happy with that, and they'll stop thinking, and they'll move on. You know, there's very few people who will actually take in the new evidence, think, oh, maybe I was wrong about that, and then, you know, try and go further and deeper into it. A lot of people don't have that sort of time. So, you know, this is what we're discovering. And we, you know, I've written to lots of websites. I've written to Coast to Coast. You know, I've written to other people that I know, and they don't respond. You know, I've written to people like Linda Moulton Howe. I've written to a number of other people, showing them, you know, asking them to go and look at this data, and we get no response. So, you know, what we're doing is...
Andrew, I want to ask a question. You know, we've got a Democratic Party here, we've got a Republican Party here, and it was a Republican president that, you know, that was president when this happened. And it's my belief that the people like Stephen Jones and others in that category would much rather just blame the Republicans. In other words, I think that what they are doing is only attacking the Republicans. And that's what I think their theories are doing. That's my personal opinion. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, you know, validity in that. You know, it has been very fashionable, certainly since before Obama came in, that, you know, Bush bashing was very easy to do, and to lay 9/11 at his feet and the feet of Cheney and Rumsfeld. It's a very unpopular administration for obvious reasons. And so, you know, they can offload a lot of the 9/11 issues onto them, you know,
right.
And I think that's what has happened. And I think when you start to look at these other issues that we, you know, I've touched on, and there is a lot more to this, by the way, then you're moving away from this paradigm of it being, you know, a sort of a Republican scam, you know, of some kind, or
exactly.
A black operation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and also going on to the presidential situation, I mean, I was very struck that Obama came and did a European tour before he was even elected. You know, I mean, I've never known a presidential candidate come to the UK and give speeches before Obama did. So,
no, it's never happened before, ever.
No.
And the things that have happened since he came to power, we've never had a president take over our car companies. We've never had a president run us up in the deficit the way we have. The stimulus bill wasn't even written by anybody in our Congress. It was written by a group that is sort of connected to Acorn. It was written by the Apollo Group. And in that group are Marxists and communists and ex-felons. And some of these people, you know, literally came into the White House as Obama's advisors. We are as close to Venezuela as any country could possibly be right now. And so I don't think that anybody in our country feels that a 9/11, a new 9/11 investigation is important, because we're seeing our country literally turning into Maoist China or Stalinist Russia, and we're just trying to put the brakes on that and stop that. And so, Andrew, you may have to be the one that gets the investigation going outside of the United States.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, maybe not me personally, but essentially what we're looking at is a new way of doing things completely.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think what you said there, it sounds silly to me, but, you know, I think, again, there's probably a lot of truth in that, because we are independent. And, you know, I'm perfectly happy for people to ring me up. I'm not going to answer emails. I said this in a talk I gave. I said, anyone can, you know, just ask me anything you like, and I'll try and answer it. And then somebody said to me in email, you know, oh, you said you didn't talk, you'd answer anything that I asked you. And he was expecting me to type it out all in email. You know, I haven't got time to do that. But
yeah,
if people, you know, the phone number's on my website, and they can ring me up. People have rung me up out of the blue, and I'll tell them whatever they need to know. You know, I've got no connection to anybody. I spent, you know, thousands of pounds on trying to give out this information. I've contributed to Dr. Wood's legal costs, which are, you know, considerable. So I've tried to do these things, and I'm just trying to do the best that I can, and I don't expect other people to react in the same way that I do. I hope they will, but I don't expect them to. You know, so we're faced with a very difficult situation, but I think going back to what you were saying about the various administrations and it being a global cabal, as you were discussing earlier, I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody that's got the ability to steer a hurricane, or somebody that's got the ability to cover up the data provided by Dr. Wood and Morgan Reynolds, not only in the USA, but in the UK as well, because if they're got the ability to do that, it must be a global group. You know, if you look at all the chemtrails that's going on, who's doing that? Is Russia doing that? I believe that chemtrails are appearing in India, they're appearing in Australia. So who's doing it? And I think that all these things, the chemtrailing and what's happened on 9/11 now that this has been uncovered and revealed to people, that's eventually going to lead us to the identity of the people that are doing it. And one thing that our investigation has revealed, and Dr. Wood's investigation has revealed, is not who's done 9/11, but it has revealed who's helped to cover it up. And those people are named in the legal documents, which are in the court of the Southern District of New York. And those are the contractors which NIST used to write their reports. They participated provably, and they were paid to produce accurate reports, and they didn't. They produce fraudulent reports, and we can prove that. So we sure as heck know who is associated with the cover-up, even if we don't know who actually, you know, was responsible for pushing the buttons on 9/11.
Well, you know, that's what the problem is. This cabal, and if you want to check out the work, you can go to hawkscafe.com or captainsherlock.com. It's an, you know, a 30-year airline pilot and a forensic economist that have joined together to prove that a lot of these things that, you know, we're blaming on our government actually comes from this external cabal. And, you know, I've heard all of the theories, and their theory of who's running the world is the only one that makes sense to me.
Right.
And so it takes a long time to really get into it and really understand it. I mean, it took me months, but now that I'm understanding who they are, where they are, and all of these people were surrounding Barack Obama, and David and Field were doing their research on this group long before they'd ever even heard the name Barack Obama.
Right.
And so it's, I think it is something that will fit right in with the research that you are doing. Andrew, is there anything else we need to finish up before we start, open up the lines, start taking some calls?
Well, just one quick mention that I've you know, put a lot of background to what I've tried to do in the last couple of years is document how, you know, you ask the question, why haven't I heard of Morgan Reynolds? Why haven't I heard of Judy Wood? You know, hardly
right.
at all. I've essentially documented what I think is the cause for that in the book that I've called 9/11 Finding the Truth. And if you Google Andrew Johnson 9/11 book, you'll find it. It's available as a free download. So you can get that book.
Okay, and Andrew, we'll come right back here. You're listening to Radio RMN on the Micro Effect Broadcast Network. We're talking to Andrew Johnson from England, and we're talking about 9/11, and we will be opening the lines in just a moment. We'll be back. You are listening to Radio RMN. This is Raylan, and I'm talking with Andrew Johnson, and we're talking about 9/11. And I do have some comments to read to you right now. Mary says, the point is there's more than enough evidence to warrant a real investigation of 9/11, and the inside job is more plausible when the big global picture is taken into account. The problem is too many people are dumbed down. You know, but the real problem, Mary, and everybody who's listening, is who is going to do this investigation? We don't have anybody in power right at the moment who has the ability to really open up something like this. All of them are either blackmailed or they're bribed or they and their families are threatened. And so, you know, even the Republicans who want to open up an investigation like this, they're walking a razor's edge. And, you know, they do one thing wrong, they know either their kids get killed or they get killed. Or worse, they get slimed. You know, slimed, you know, they send in a woman to have an affair with them, and then their whole reputation is ruined forever. That's what they've done with the governor of North Carolina recently. And the reason they did that with him is he was getting ready to secede from the union because of what our president is doing. Andrew, do you want to open up the lines now? Because we do have people that want to call in and talk to you about this.
Make two brief comments there in relation to that as well. I mean, there is an investigation available, but it's been covered up, and that's the research done by Dr. Judy Ward and Dr. Morgan Reynolds. Now,
they're
independent investigators. They're experts of one kind or another, particularly Dr. Judy Ward, who has a very high level of technical qualifications, which make her investigation very valid, not only because of her background, but also because of the evidence. And that investigation has been put into a legal framework, so it is a legitimate, valid investigation. So I would suggest that people go and look for the investigation, because the 9/11 Truth Movement is not going to tell you about it. In fact, they've tried to cover it up as well. And that's what's documented in my book, which, as I say, is available as a free download, or you can get a paperback version. And if you just Google Andrew Johnson 9/11 book, you'll get to the free download page, and you can download it. You know, I don't want anything for it. You can get most of it on my website. And so also I think it's probably worth saying that if you do speak to David Hawkes again, he was a member of the original scholars group, and you might like to get his take on what I've told you in terms of Hurricane Erin and the energy question, which I just want to very briefly mention again. The other reason why we haven't had an investigation is I think that investigation will reveal the energy cover-up. It has to, because what we found was the reason why Stephen E. Jones is involved is because of the energy issue. He knows that free energy is real, I would contend, and we know now from the evidence that free energy technology, where you can get energy from nowhere, has been weaponized, and it was used on 9/11. So the whole free energy movement, which is also controlled by the intelligence services or whoever it is that's doing it. The reason why it is controlled is because if it ever got out that people knew that free energy was real, the whole socio-economic structure of the world would change completely beyond recognition. Because once you've got the energy, you know, enough energy for free that you don't have to buy off anyone and you're not controlled, you can do anything you want. You know, you can get up in the morning, you can get into your anti-gravity spaceship, and you can fly to Pluto for lunch and come back at no cost. You know, that's the sort of that's what's available, and what the events of 9/11 prove that this is possible is how I, you know, phrase this to people now.
Okay, so where do we go from here? I mean, not just here in the show, but what do you think? I mean, it's like the whole world is waking up, and that's what I'm talking about here in the United States. We now have a president who, in my opinion, is backed by this worldwide terrorist cabal that literally came out of the 1970s. And you know, if you follow the laws that are trying to be passed in our Congress right now, you can see that our freedom, especially our freedom of speech, is just absolutely hanging by a thread. What they're trying to do, you won't even believe this, Andrew, what they're trying to do is pass a law which is called diversity in media. And diversity means you've got to have minorities, equal amount of minorities owning all the radio stations. And so if a radio station is owned by a white man, that white man is going to have to pay 100% of his gross in taxes. And then that money will be given over to public radio. And public radio here in the United States is liberal radio, literally bordering on socialist radio. It does not represent the Constitution of the United States. It does not represent conservatives. And so, I mean, as I said, literally, we are here, and I know the people who are listening to this understand what I'm saying. I mean, it's possible that people in England don't see what a dire situation Americans are in right now. I mean, we're truly just one step away from losing our Constitution. And that's why I'm saying, where do we go from here? Is there some way? I wish that, you know, maybe David Hawkins and Field would tie 9/11 in. They probably already have. I just haven't covered that. I'll be interviewing David again on Wednesday. He's a regular guest on Wednesday, and the reason that I have him as a regular guest on Wednesday is because his theory is so extremely complicated that it literally has to be explained over and over and over again. So this Wednesday, I'll ask him about 9/11 and the 9/11 Scholars for Truth.
Sure, yes, please do. I mean, as to where we go from here, you know, that's the ultimate question, really, isn't it? I mean, I think people just have to use their own power to effect the change that they want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, the fact that we're talking now on this radio show, I mean, you know, 5-10 years ago, this simply wouldn't have been possible. So although on the one hand we're getting all these laws, you know, it's the same in England where, you know, we have the Terrorism Act in the UK, and that was in the year 2000, you know, as if they knew 9/11 was coming. We've had the various acts here which are sort of similar to your Patriot Act. We don't have a constitution in the same form as the US does, so things are a bit different, you know, constitutionally here. But we're seeing exactly the same sorts of laws. We've got an anti-smoking law here in public places, which has reduced the amount that people will meet in public places and this sort of thing.
Okay,
so we're seeing a very similar trend here.
Yeah, hold on, Andrew. We'll be right back, and our question then is, what do we do? We're talking with Andrew Johnson. What do we do about getting the truth of 9/11 to the people of the world? You're listening to Radio RMN on the Micro Effect Broadcast Network. You are listening to Radio RMN. This is Raylan. I'm talking with Andrew Johnson. We're talking about 9/11, but we're talking about a lot of other things, too. And Andrew, you know, right at the moment, people here in America, we are feeling the push coming so quickly, and I actually think it's the 9/11 truth movement, you know, the real truthers, people like you, you know, who aren't accepting, you know, we've got the government theory, then we've got the anti-government theory, then we've got the truth. And the anti-government theory, you know, being put out by Stephen Jones and a lot of other people, that's the one that the government literally put out, in my opinion, to keep the masses involved and quiet. But there's a whole bunch of other people that are really waking up, and people like you, people like our listeners, who know that the Stephen Jones theory of what happened, and they know that the architect's theory of what happened, that's not real. And so they are waking up, and they are looking for something. And I think the worldwide cabal that I'm talking about realizes this. And so what do? They bring on, you know, this worldwide pandemic. Here in the United States, they are going to require people to take 3 shots. And the 3 shots literally, in my opinion, will wipe out people. Is that the same way in England? Are they going to require you to take 3 vaccines so that you don't get the flu? You die from the vaccines instead?
Well, they've been ramping that up over the summer now into the latest scare story. You know, I call it health terrorism.
You call it what? And
health terrorism.
Oh, that's absolutely correct. I mean, here we're gathering to wake up our local communities and, you know, just say no. And how can they throw us all into, detention camps? How can they throw 300 million people into detention camps? And the detention camps, we've been hearing about them for years and years and years. Now it's finally coming out that they're real. They used to be one of the urban legends. But one of the states, I can't remember what it is, I think it was Connecticut, just passed a law that will force you to go into quarantine, and not quarantine in your own home, quarantine in a quarantine pen where they want to put you.
It is very troubling. We're getting not quite at that level here, but there's some people making noises to that effect. My response to this, again, going back to 9/11, once I was sure, for example, that it was a new type of weaponry which was used on 9/11, once that was clear to me, my response was I actually thought, well, I think military people are going to be quite interested in this, because if you look at the way these things work, let's just suppose there was an official inquiry, and it was legitimate and honest and valid, what would it conclude? Well, having done my own inquiry, I know what it would conclude, because I know what the evidence is and I know what it tells me. They would conclude that some type of weaponry was used, which was beyond anything we'd ever seen before. And if there was a correct use of channels of communication, that information would be communicated to the military. So I thought, well, why don't I just write to the military myself and tell them what the conclusions are of this investigation? So I did that in December last year, and I was triggered off by another police intervention event which happened in Liverpool, and that's what triggered me off. So I wrote to all the chiefs of police in the UK and about 70 military bases, and I sent them the information, the summary of what I'm telling the listeners. And I just did it myself. I did it on my own printer and printed it all out, posted it, and it cost me maybe, I don't know, $40, something like that, to do all this. So, what do we do? That was what I did. And other people can do the same sorts of things. They can get the swine flu information, they can put it in an envelope, and they can write to the sheriff, they can write to the local authority figures. That's what I would do, because then there's a chance that they would see what's going on. It might be a small chance, and they're going to have to make a choice between their job and the truth of what's actually going on, that they're being manipulated, as we've already discussed.
That's absolutely correct. Unfortunately, there are many of us that live in areas that have already sold out to the New World Order. And in my area, if I sent a letter to my sheriff, I'd end up in jail, for trying to get the truth out. And sadly,
Maybe that's true, I don't know, but we certainly haven't got to that point here. I haven't been thrown in jail for writing my letters. I did get a couple of interesting responses, and I had a visit from somebody that was quite interested, but it's certainly a very amicable visit, and they couldn't argue with anything that I'd got in my letter, so I was quite comfortable that I'd actually have a positive effect overall, because ultimately we are going to have to look at these people in authority to make a choice. Our choice has already been made, in effect, and it's up to them to make their choice now as to who they're going to serve, the people above them or the people below them.
That is exactly it. I agree. That is exactly it. Who do they serve, the people above them or the people below them? We've got a call. Do you want to take a call now?
Sure.
Okay, Robert in California. Go ahead.
Andrew, Raylan, it's Bob Singer.
Oh, hello, Bob.
you didn't get my email. I've been listening to the show. My first comment, Andrew, what exactly was the motive and the purpose of them testing their laser weapon or their free energy on 9/11? Were they taunting us with their with their weapon that they won't give us free energy. They want to kill 3,000 Americans, pass the Patriot Act, build up the military, invade Afghanistan and Iraq. What was their goal? You know what I believe, so what do you believe their goal
was? I know what you believe. Firstly, I can answer parts of that. It wasn't a laser weapon. Let's get that right out of the vocabulary.
You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but I just want to make that clear because this is one of the very subtle and not so subtle ways that this has been covered up. They say a laser destroyed the towers, and people probably think, well, you know, I know what a laser looks like, and I never saw that on 9/11, so that must be a load of rubbish. So we've got to be very careful about the language that we use. It was actually a technique of interfering fields.
Rephrase it. Okay. Whatever was going on,
that you believe on 9/11,
what was their goal?
The goal was clearly to start a war on terror. That was one of the goals.
Well, they could have done that without 9/11.
They could have done that in another way, yes.
Okay. That seemed
to be one of the motives.
It's what?
That seemed to be one of the motives, yes.
Okay,
Robert,
but that makes no sense.
Robert, are you on speakerphone?
No, I'm not. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I've got the... I bet you I know what's wrong. Let me turn...
Okay,
let me close the tab of the radio show.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Maybe that's what it is.
How about that? Does it go away now?
Well, I don't know. Go ahead.
I know. Okay.
My point
is this. You know what? Let's go back to the guy that you said has the complicated theory, Raylan, that you have on the show.
David Hawkins, right.
Yeah, it's so complicated you have to have him keep coming on to explain it.
Mm-hmm.
My theory is so simple. It's a game. It's just simply a game, and we're pawns in the game. It doesn't require any complicated theory to understand that. We're here to trash the planet.
Robert, it took 3 hours for me to understand what you were getting at. And so, yes, your theory is just as complicated as David's theory.
Well, no. It took 3 hours to get you to grapple with it because it was cognitive dissonance. But it's a simple explanation. You didn't want to go there. It's just a game.
Yes, but who are the players in the game, and how can we get them to stop playing?
And we got it. We create positive energy. That's how we beat them.
Okay.
We get your earth. We get everybody to breathe at the same time. We get people to grow their own food in cooperation with their neighbors.
Okay,
we look for ways to create positive energy. It's that simple.
Okay, Robert, do you have any questions specifically for Andrew?
Well, that was my main question. If his justification for all that chaos on 9/11 was so they could taunt us that we don't have free energy or start a war on terror, that makes no sense.
And Andrew, what's your
I didn't really get a chance to go any further into what I was saying. I think one of the motives was to create the war on terror. There were obviously other motives as well, one of which I think was they wanted to try out the weapon, and they wanted to see if they could get away with the cover-up, and that they actually did. So in other words, they destroyed two buildings, two of the tallest buildings in the world, in broad daylight, with this weaponry, and nobody noticed. In fact, it took somebody who's reasonably intelligent, i.e. me, let's see, it took me 6 years to work out what had actually happened, and that was with a lot of help from Dr. Wood. She began to work it out on the day it happened. So they got away with this huge cover-up, and that, I think, showed how much the mind control, which has been going on since the invention of television, probably before, has been working, you know, how well it's been working, so that they could use the television and the media networks to cover all this up, and they've successfully done that.
Okay. That's
so
a lot of trouble. That's a lot of trouble for them to go to.
Oh, yeah, sure, it was a lot of trouble.
Why bother? Wait a minute. Andrew, the asses are not woken up. They're never going to wake up. The asses are keeping quiet on purpose. They watch TV, they go to sporting events, and they shop. They didn't need to go to that much trouble to prove we're not waking up.
Maybe not, but, you know, I'm just giving you my opinion. It might be wrong. I can't say what motive that they have for 9/11 other than what I've given you, because I'm not one of the people who did it. You know, you have to find out who did it and go and ask them, you know. But if we follow the evidence, we may be able to find out who did it, and then when we found out, we can ask them. You know, that might seem like a ridiculous long-term goal, but that's the way I look at it.
The only way that you could make that statement is that you believe that the French Revolution didn't create the middle class. You're no, saying the members of the Third Estate can gas the Rothschild.
Robert, I think you need to hang up. Robert, please hang up. Because you're taking Andrew's program in your direction. You had your own show. Let Andrew have his, okay? Thank you. We do have a question for you, Andrew. The energy weapon that you're talking about, she'd like to know a little bit more about it. And she has heard that this energy weapon is the same energy weapon is actually responsible for the cow mutilations, and it's been, and if it is, it's been around for what, 30 years?
Yes, that's a fantastic question, and again, there's a couple of interesting things I can say in relation to that. This class of technology, which is called the Hutchison effect, that's one version of it. If you look around and you read the various things about flying saucers and you look how they work and you read about cattle mutilations and what's been happening there, it could be that we're looking at an underlying technology which is the same. Another thing that Dr. Wood discovered, and I think, you know, the best person to get this from is her, so, you know, if you invite her onto the program, she can tell you a lot more and a lot more accurately than I can, because I may be misquoting certain things or not quite getting them as she would explain them, because she is, as I said, a specialist in material science. She has that background and training that I don't have. But going back to the technology, look at the Alfred P. Murrah building. If you go onto Dr. Wood's homepage and scroll down it to about the middle, you'll see two pictures. On the left, we've got the Alfred P. Murrah building, which was the building that was bombed in Oklahoma in 95. And on the right, you've got World Trade Center 6, and they look uncannily similar. So we believe that part of this technology may have been used on the Alfred P. Murrah building in 1995, and Dr. Wood has uncovered some pictures which show similar types of damage to the cars that were nearby at that time to what we saw at World Trade Center 6.
Mm-hmm.
We've also seen other cases where we've had levitation effects. I've been looking at crop circles recently, which seems like a funny stretch to go to from 9/11, but we think that this technology could be used to change the local gravitational field, and that's one of the side effects. And we say that because we've got two pieces of evidence from the World Trade Center. One is we've got pictures of cars which are upside down next to cars which are the right way up. We've also got several witness accounts of people being levitated as they're running along. In fact, David Hansher, who's a New York Daily News photographer, you can find an interview with him from October 2001 where he describes being picked up and levitated and carried a block. Now, some people say this was a blast of wind as the towers came down, but if you look at the way the cloud came out, there was no way that that wind was powerful enough to actually lift people up and carry them in a city block without doing a lot more damage. And we also see the leaves on the trees after the event.
Andrew, this is a story that I haven't heard. Who was this man again who was picked up and carried a block?
If you go onto Google and search for David Hansher, that's H-A-N-D-S-H-U-H, I think you'll get his name from that. He was a photographer for the New York Daily News,
okay. And
he's got this interview from 2001 where he describes being there, looking up at the tower, taking a photograph of this supposed plane that impacted. He didn't hear the second plane. The photograph that he took with an explosion coming out doesn't show a plane. And then he reports that he was levitated as he was running away from the tower coming down, and he was levitated and carried a block. We have Rennie Davila said that a mysterious force went inside his bag and moved things around inside his bag that he was carrying with him. He was an emergency medical technician. We've got reports of cars flipping over as people are walking along. So we're looking at an effect on gravity as part of this weapon, which we've seen with, I've got a report from a crop circle in 1989 where somebody was levitated and carried 30 feet just after the formation of a crop circle that they were investigating. So I think we're seeing an underlying technology here which is the same and is being used in various different ways to do these things.
So in other words, what my reader said about the same technology being used to kill cattle, that could be true. But
yes.
Have you ever looked into these cattle mutilation theories? I mean, do you have any
yes.
idea What do you think? What's it all about?
Very difficult question to answer. We get them in the UK as well. In fact, I recently watched a documentary a couple of months ago, and they're much more extensive in the UK than I'd realized. We had a chap that's been round to a number of incidents in the UK, and one where I think about 30 sheep were found mutilated in one place with no explanation. I don't know who's doing it. I don't know exactly what the reason is. It appears that they're doing some type of sampling operation, taking out the tissues of these animals and putting them in, doing some tests on them or taking material. It's typically the same parts of the animals, you know, the rectal area. They take an eye and possibly the tongue and some of the face, cheek muscles and that sort of thing. And we find these animals in strange positions sometimes. They don't get attacked by predators. But my question is, why do they leave the carcasses there in that state? Why, whoever's doing it, whether it's some ETs doing it or whether it's some black ops, you know, deep black operation, why do they want us to discover it? They must be putting out another fear card. They're leaving a fear card because they could just as easily take the carcass away and then we would not know it's even happened.
Yeah,
so they want us to know that it's happened.
And it makes me wonder, you know, I have heard these theories that our government, you know, has told the aliens that they can have a certain amount of humans every year, you know, if they just, you know, keep it covered up. And so if they're doing this with cattle, why aren't they doing it with humans and leaving the human bodies there?
Good question. That's another question. Well, there is one report of a human mutilation, but I don't know whether this has been proved to be genuine or some kind of elaborate hoax. But there is one report of a human mutilation, which you'll find if you Google it. But it's certainly not as widespread as with the cattle. Or at least, if it is, it's been very well covered up.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Let's go back to the crop circles because everybody is interested in crop circles. You talked about a machine controlling the gravitational field. And so what you're describing is that whatever force field it's putting over this field, the force field has stamped into it the image that will become the crop circle. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I think it's possible. If we take the idea now, if we're looking at the evidence we've seen on 9/11, we know that somebody's got technology to destroy the towers in 10 seconds each, and they didn't collapse, they turned to dust. A lot of people use this word collapse, and as Dr. Wood has pointed out, they didn't collapse, they turned to dust.
Right.
And we've seen the evidence. If you look at the pictures on Dr. Wood's website, you'll see the evidence that these cars have been turned upside down, and we've got these witness accounts. So it looks like there's an effect on gravity, as I already said. So, yes, if you can control the gravitational field more finely using perhaps some variant of this technology or having it set up in a different mode of operation, you know, because when we see a crop circle, it is as if a weight is pressed down on it in a particular way. You know, as if somebody's got this giant, you know, complicated sort of paperweight, and press the pattern into the crop. So how would you do that? Well, how about being able to manipulate the gravitational field and make an imprint using gravity? That would work, wouldn't it? Well, yes, it would. So what if it's the same sort of technology? You know, I don't know. This is complete guesswork on my part, but all I've done is taken the evidence, you know, that's at the World Trade Center and compared it with some of the evidence from the crop circles. And the other interesting thing that I was listening to recently was the residual effects in crop circles that people report. They'll go online in a crop circle, and some of them have a healing experience, but more often people actually feel ill when they're inside crop circles. And it appears that there's some magnetic field, a residual effect in the magnetic field that appears to be happening in crop circles. So, and this is what we've actually seen at the World Trade Center, believe it or not, because we've got the Bankers Trust Building, another bit of evidence that nobody talks about. The Bankers Trust Building was 40 stories high. It was opposite the World Trade Center. It was damaged as the towers came down. There was a big gash which gouged out of the front of it, several stories high. The building was repaired in about 2004, 2005, and all the damaged stories were put back. But then, in 2006, they decided that it had got a mold infection. That was the official explanation. How you get a mold infection in a steel-framed building, I'm not sure. And they started to take it down piece by piece at a cost of $70 million. And they are now down to, I think, about 20 or 15 stories, taking down the Bankers Trust building.
What do you think they're taking it down for?
I think they can't demolish it because it's in the center of New York. That would be too difficult or too complicated or too expensive.
Okay.
If you look at the evidence that Dr. Wood has again uncovered, you can see anomalous rusting. The beams in this building have started to rust. And we understand that this is what John Hutchison has observed in some of his experiments, in that, for example, he can get stainless steel to rust using the beaming effect of his equipment. So that's very unusual. Stainless steel doesn't rust very quickly. It usually takes years, tens of years for that to happen. But this is what's been happening in the Bankers Trust building. You've got this anomalous rusting.
And so the Bankers Trust building must have been hit by the same energy weapon.
Yeah, we think it was somehow infected, and that was the word that John Hutchison used, that somehow the energy or some of the material, because the cloud of material which came out from the World Trade Center, this is what Dr. Wood talks about in one of her talks, and again, if you had her on and you asked her this, she'd explain it probably better than I can, that the cloud of material that came from when the two towers were destroyed appears to have been energized somehow in some strange way, not in the sense of it being hot, but it appeared that there was some energy associated with it, and that cloud impinged partly onto the Bankers Trust building as one of the towers was actually coming down in this sort of shower of dust. And it may be that in that sort of destruction, some of the material was transferred across to the Bankers Trust. That's what it looks like. And it became infected with an after effect of the energy. Sounds pretty far out. But
well,
when you're getting...
my older readers are very familiar with John Hutchison. We published quite a bit of stuff. I don't understand the infected. In other words, we're talking about an energy, that maybe, I'm just going to say, it floats around in a bubble. So we're talking about this bubble of energy that literally got into the molecules of this Bankers Trust building, or the atoms and molecules?
Something like that. I mean, again, we're only going on very limited information. Somebody knows exactly what happened, and somebody knows why they had to take the building down. We don't have that information. All we can report is what's actually happened at Ground Zero. And that's one of the things that nobody talks about. But what I think it is what I would call a low-level nuclear reaction. It's some type of slowly degrading process that takes place maybe over a few months or years. And the material is actually slowly breaking down from one molecular form to another molecular form.
Yeah, that's what
it looked like.
That was what I was thinking also. Andrew, we're coming up to the top of the hour again. I'd like to get into some of your other stuff. You've got some really terrific articles on your page. We're talking with Andrew Johnson, and we'll be right back here on Rumor Mill News Radio on the Micro Effect Broadcast Network. You are listening to Radio RMN, and I'm talking with Andrew Johnson. We've been talking about 9/11, but we're going to start getting into other things right now. And it's very interesting. National Geographic is running a 9/11 program tonight. And, of course, it's the typical cover-up piece, probably produced by the very people who did 9/11 or some of their lackeys. But it is kind of interesting that they're showing it tonight. It's like they're getting people ready for something. I'm not quite sure what. But getting back to Andrew's page is checktheevidence.co.uk. Checktheevidence.co.uk. And you've got this one article in here that just is really extraordinary. Is ET disclosure more important than exposing our physics truth embargo? Oh, you didn't write that. Dan Johnson wrote that.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. But what do you think about this ET? I mean, you wouldn't have it on your page. You know, I saw Johnson, and I just figured it was you. I didn't realize it was another Johnson.
That's okay.
What can you say about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, this is what Dan Johnson has written there. He sent this to me not very long ago. I think I only posted it, I think, yesterday or the day before.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's right on there, because a lot of people are over, you know, focused on the disclosure about aliens. But, you know, people like yourself and many people, many of your listeners, they've already had experiences with non-human intelligence. And they know that it's not human, you know,
right,
whatever form that takes. You know, and so the whole ET disclosure thing, it's really no big deal to them in that sense. They know that it's real already. You know, it's like having the disclosure about cars, you know, being
right,
real or something, you know. And I've heard people actually use this analogy, you know. So I think Dan's perspective is, what about the science which needs to be disclosed? And this, again, I know I'm going back to 9/11, but it does directly relate to that as well. Because we've got a whole set of physics here which has been covered up and hidden. And we've seen this happen with, for example, with Maxwell's equations, which were published in the late 19th century. And then they were revised, quote-unquote, by two characters called Gibbs and Heaviside. And they took out a lot of the more, esoteric features which explain things like multidimensional reality, or maybe not explain, but they opened up the possibility for that to become analyzed in a scientific framework, if I can put it like that, perhaps. So I think Dan's article is more, you know, well, let's say that they have the ET disclosure. What's that going to mean in terms of the physics that becomes available? I mean, what physics do they use to propel their craft from one side of the Earth to the other in a matter of seconds, you know? But I think that some people here who are running everything already understand that physics very well, and they know a lot more about what's been going on in the solar system in the last 65 million years. You know, and I like Dan's article because he asked a very unusual question, and he put it in a framework which is not often seen, and that's why I posted it. I think he's absolutely right to be asking those questions.
So in other words, what is more important is the energy that our government has covered up, and you think that it came from the UFOs, or did it come from, you know, ancient technology that somebody uncovered somewhere, or was it, you know, is this the German technology that has advanced to the point that it is now? Where do you think this secret technology came from?
All of the above.
All of the above.
I'm familiar with Joseph Farrell's work and
looking
at Richard Hoagland stuff, you know. And, but then you look at something like Coral Castle, for example, in the 20s, you know, that was built in 1910, 1920. And look at how Edward Lee Scarlett built Coral Castle.
Yeah, Coral Castle in Florida, yes.
In Florida.
Right.
And you look at that, and where did he get the technology from? He clearly didn't use conventional, pulleys and levers. I mean, he was 5 foot high, he weighed 100 pounds, and yet this guy was built a construction with 25 and 30 ton blocks everywhere, a door which could turn on a dime, you know, so accurately placed. How did he do it?
Wasn't this guy from the same place that Nikola Tesla was from?
Close. He was from Latvia, which Tesla was from Serbia, which they are. I don't know if they're bordering countries, but I'd have to go and look at my map. But they're
in the same
part of Europe.
Right. Because I'd always wondered if maybe that sort of technology was commonly used in those countries. That's what I wondered. Because I heard of one other person that is from the same place where Tesla is from. That also was doing the same kind of research that Tesla was doing, and it just makes me wonder if something was in that area that people had used for centuries, and they just thought that it was normal.
I think that's quite possible, because I think, you know, one point that's perhaps obvious but worth making is that in some of these hidden away areas, in the sort of late, before the Second World War, I suppose, where there was more wilderness and there was less access to these areas, both in terms of, you know, by road travel or air travel, or indeed by, you know, telephone communications, for example. Who's to say what was used in those communities with regularity? You know, what free energy technology was in use then? It may have been quite common for some people to have certain free energy devices in regular daily use, and we'd never necessarily know about it now, you know, because they fell out of use or
I have a fellow on, I can't remember his name right now, but he does forbidden history, and the things that they have found in coal mines, batteries, things that look like electrical lights that are actually inside of the coal. And so, you know, I think most of my audience agrees with me that we've had advanced civilizations here on Earth for eons. You know,
yes.
We weren't the first one. There are many before us. And how do we know that over there where Tesla was from, some of that advanced technology, you know, didn't continue to be passed down from, you know, father to son?
Absolutely, and I think, you know, there's certain specific things you can find out about some of this technology as well. I mean, I'm not the first to notice this, but, for example, if we take the anti-gravity technology,
mm-hmm.
and I listened to a broadcast by David Hatcher Childress, who was talking about the Vedic scripts and the Vimanas,
mm-hmm.
and the Vimanas are the craft which were flown by these figures in the Vedic scripts, which are in India, and David Hatcher Childress, he discussed this book, which was called the Vimanaka Shastra, I think it's called, and in this book, it discusses how these Vimanas actually worked, you know, as principles of operation, or some of them, and they mention in this mercury vapor or mercury plasma of some kind being used in the operation of these craft.
Now, the Vimanas were flying craft.
Yes, correct. Yeah. They were flying craft, and they were part of an ancient sort of technology which is described in the Vedic scripts, and they describe wars between these various factions and different types of Vimanas being used.
And supposedly this is like 500,000 years old, isn't it?
I think the scripts themselves are 5,000 years old,
5,000,
I believe,
okay.
That order. But the stories themselves, of course, may be considerably older, you know, because they're passed down, and so I don't know what the actual date is on the stories. So we've got this mention of mercury vapor, and then we come across the work of people like Joseph Farrell and Nick Cook, and they mention this German Bell experiment, which was towards the end of the Second World War, in this underground facility in what is now Poland, was then I think in Germany, and the Bell used red mercury in its construction, and this was thought to be some type of anti-gravity or even some sort of time dilation experiment of some kind.
You know,
and then,
it's very interesting. I just want to inject something about the Murrah Building. There's a man here in jail in the United States. He's been in jail since 89, I think. His name is Michael Reconosciuto, and he's a genius scientist in many different fields, also CIA. And my husband told me, my husband was also CIA, he told me that the real reason that Michael is in jail is he had the ability to build the red mercury bomb.
Wow.
And I'm wondering, I don't even know what my husband meant by saying the red mercury bomb. And so I'm asking you, do you know what he meant? But that was what was used to take down
I've not heard of the red mercury bomb at all. I've not heard it used in a bombing, framework, as it were, at all. But if it was some type of unconventional technology, then you know, who knows? But what was going to just make the one final connection was with another black project,
mm-hmm.
which I came across. And there's a chap called Edgar Fouché, and he was working in Area 51, I think in the 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
And he overheard a conversation about this aircraft, which was given the name of the TR-3B.
Mm-hmm.
and it had the facility to reduce its weight by 89%. It had an anti-gravity kind of propulsion system or a gravity reduction system. And he stated that this propulsion system, what it used was a rotating plasma, and that plasma was a mercury-based plasma. We've got three references to mercury spanning, you know, sort of thousands of years, but all involved with anti-gravity technology. So, you know, I was sort of struck by this as a clue to how perhaps some of this technology might operate. And we know that mercury is a very unusual substance. It's the only metal that's liquid at room temperature. So, you know, that in of itself is a very unusual property.
Boy, it certainly does. Let's get into chemtrails, if you don't mind. I've got a listener who wants to know more about Hurricane Aaron. But chemtrails seem to be related to everything that's going on the planet. And what do you think they're here for?
As a quick answer, I think that they have two main purposes. One is to do with weather control of some kind.
Okay.
And the other is possibly to do with being immunosuppressive. Possibly they're putting, the bacterial agents in there and the bioweapons of some kind. I'm not really convinced of that myself because, you know, if that was true, we'd get heavy days of trailing and then we'd see lots of people going down with illnesses. There are some cases where that has happened on odd occasions. I know that one or two communities have experienced something like that, but it seems, from my understanding, to be pretty isolated. You know, we're not seeing it on any kind of national scale. You know, we're just seeing on more localized scale. So I don't think they're putting active biological contaminants in these. I think that could be disinformation. What they could be doing is putting stuff which is actually immunosuppressive. In other words, it's making our immune systems weaker.
Right.
And then they're gonna introduce the bacterial, warfare type things, maybe in some less obvious way, I don't know.
Well, here in California, you know, we're burning to the ground, and we've got all of these pollutants. I live in Central California, but we've had forest fires here in our area, too. And the other day, we had, some sort of cloud inversion where the clouds were keeping the heat in. I live right by the ocean, and it never gets hot here. It was 101, and
wow.
We had all of these particulates in the air, but from a break in the clouds, I looked up, and there are the chemtrail planes, you know, just literally making crosshatches all over our area, and it's like, you know, here we are, we're suffocating to death, you know, we're practically dying because of the pollutants in the air, and what are these chemtrails? What are they doing up there with the chemtrails? I mean, it was like they were throwing us a triple effect. And when things like this happen, the elderly die. You know, the elderly and the chronically ill die. And if you look at the health plan that President Obama has wanted to pass, and, you know, he wants you to sort of make a right to die will out rather than a living will, a dying will, at a certain point they can just kill you. They can send you home without taking care of you and let you die at home. And I think that's what a lot of the chemtrail activity is doing, is killing off. You know, it's like the herd. You know, when a lion is chasing a herd of gazelles, it's the weaker of the herd that gets killed. And I think right now, they're killing off the weak ones. And it happens so, you know, well, first of all, how would we even know who dies? You know, you'd have to look in the obituaries of every single little town across the country. And so we have no death statistics anymore. We don't know how many people die a day or of what. And so that's just kind of my feeling. I think it's thinning the herd.
Yeah, I think there must be something like that going on as well. You know, I think pinning it down is very difficult. I think what is clear to me is that regular air traffic does not make grids and patterns in the sky.
No, they don't make a crosshatch pattern that I saw the other day, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, we're going to go to a break in just a moment. What in the world is your article about Mars and the solar system? Does that relate to anything that we're, what's going on Mars? Does that relate to what we have been talking about?
Well, I don't know. I think it's probably, there's some longer-term issue involved with that. Again, if you look at the NASA data from Mars,
we'll get right back and we'll talk about the master data from Mars. We're talking with Andrew Johnson, and you've got to go check out his website, which is called checktheevidence.co.uk, and we'll be right back here on Radio RMN on the Micro Effect Radio Network. You are listening to Radio RMN, and we're talking with Andrew Johnson from England, and his webpage is checktheevidence.co.uk. It's just absolutely fascinating. And you've got an article that you wrote on Mars. Did we finish with the topic that you were talking about before?
Yes, I think so. I think we'd sort of,
You've got a picture of a dome on your page. And what do you think that dome is? I mean, it looks like one of Bucky Fuller's, geodesic dome buildings.
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head, because I think that's exactly what it is. I think it is a geodesic dome. Now, this is one of those pictures that, a bit like with the 9/11 stuff that we've uncovered, nobody seems to want to talk about this very much.
Mm-hmm.
I came across this picture on some website, I think in about 2004, and I then immediately went to the U.S. Geological Survey website to verify it was an actual, legitimate image. And it is. You can find it on the USGS website, and the image reference, I think, is M0150-1228, if I remember it rightly,
Yes, you did. I'm looking right at it. And so this is an image from Mars.
Correct. Now, what I initially did with that, I was fascinated by that image. I'd never seen this reported anywhere, except on this website where I discovered it. And so what I did was, I just got that image, I just got the dome image, I clipped it out as a separate picture, and I sent it to 42 geologists. I found the email addresses from the universities, and I sent it to 42 geologists, and I just sent the image and told them where it was, nothing about it, and I just said, can you tell me what this is, please? And I got three responses, and three of them, then said the obvious question, which is, where did you find it? Where did it come from? And I said, oh, it's from Mars. And here's the link to the NASA website. And one chap responded and said, oh, this is a mystery. I'm just going to look at this. And he was quite pleasant and polite about it. But I never heard back from him after that, really.
Mm-hmm.
And then another chap that I wrote to, he said, oh, what's the scale? And I sent him the link, and they said it's 530, approximately 500 meters across. And then he just sent me a message back saying, oh, this image has been floating around on UFO and conspiracy websites for a number of years, and I do not believe the government or anybody else is trying to cover up a conspiracy about there being life on Mars or something like that. And I'm thinking, well, that's not what I asked you. I sent you a link to this image. I didn't ask you which websites it was on. I said, what is it? Have you got an explanation for it? And basically, he had no explanation for what was in this image. He clearly didn't want to discuss it.
I knew
that that was very important.
Okay. There's a video, and I don't know whether it's an underground video or if it was taken from, from some film that's been produced, but there is a video of Mars that has this structure on it, and the structure is kind of in disrepair, and there are people walking around, and you can see the camera looking back at this structure. I mean, I don't know where I saw it, but I definitely have seen the video. Do you remember Alternative 3? That was
on.
Was such a video in that one? I mean, was such a picture in Alternative 3?
Well, the videos that I've seen, which sound similar to what you're describing, the one that I've seen was people walking around a dilapidated structure, supposedly on the moon.
Oh, on the moon. Okay.
That was the one that I saw. There may be an equivalent one on Mars, but I don't recall seeing that particular one. So it may be that you've seen that video, and I haven't. No.
Yeah.
The one that was on the moon, I'm pretty sure was a fake because it just looked totally wrong as far as I could tell.
What do you feel about Alternative 3, though? There are some people that I know who, are high up in our government, and they say Alternative 3 is absolutely the truth.
Well, I think, going back to what we were saying about 9/11, I was being prepared for something. Some people are presenting this Alternative 3 scenario in that certain groups of people are realizing that the Earth is going to be made uninhabitable by, either by viruses or some huge catastrophe of some kind, whatever it is. And the group of people are getting together, and they're going to go back to Mars.
Back to Mars. Like me, it sounds like you believe that we came from Mars originally.
Well, again, if you look at some of the evidence, there's some interesting characteristics which come out. For example, if you take a group of people and you put them inside a darkened sort of complex, and you take away the stimulus of night and day, and you give them enough food and water and whatnot to live on and enough to do, they will revert to a 25-hour day in their sleep cycle over a period of a couple of weeks. And the orbital day on Mars is 24.9 hours.
So, interesting.
Yeah, so that's an interesting sort of thing. And we've seen, for example, the Mission to Mars film. I don't know if you've seen that film, which was made in 1999 with Gary Sinise and a couple of other people. I think Tim Robbins is in that as well. That's a very interesting film, particularly the ending. I think I've got a video clip of that on my website.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the ending of that film looks like some type of disclosure that they've muddled a few things up, I think, and they show this extraterrestrial interacting with these astronauts who have gone to the building on Mars, which is the face, and the Gary Sinise sort of talks to this ET, and the ET puts his hand inside his chest, and he holds out his hand, and he's got a coil of DNA in the ET's hand, and then he raises it up and he puts the coil of DNA in the spaceship, and the spaceship travels from Mars to the Earth, and then you see an evolutionary sequence with life evolving on Earth as if it had come from Mars.
That is so amazing, because I just got an email yesterday, and this reader believes that what is happening here on Earth with this particular flu is that they are changing our DNA. They're making a different species here on Earth.
Well, a lot of people are talking about transgenic beings, and again, is the alien abduction phenomena part of that program? Because you can see that if they're trying to develop some hybrid race of some kind or transgenic beings.
Yeah, transgenic beings. That's what I think. You can hear the music. We're talking with Andrew Johnson. We're talking about Mars. We're talking now about this flu possibly changing us into a different type of person. And we'll be right back here on Radio RNN on the Micro Effect Broadcast Network. You are listening to Radio RNN on the Micro Effect Broadcast Network. And I just have an emergency announcement for people in the Los Angeles area. We have just learned through the LAPD senior lead officer, Rich Wall, that LAPD are presently going into the community of Tehunga to evacuate those residents who live north of Day Street in the Haynes Canyon area. They are starting evacuations at the Glendale-Los Angeles border and moving west. This is due to the movement of the station fire as it heads toward Haynes Canyon. Once the evacuations are complete, LAFD plans to set a backfire, a controlled burn, in Haynes Canyon in order to protect homes which are in close proximity to the area. LAPD and LAFD would appreciate your assistance in disseminating this information to your notification lists. If anybody wants that notification, email me at Raylan, R-A-Y-E-L-A-N, at mindspring.com, and I'll get a copy of it over to you. Andrew, we've got a caller on the line who'd like to ask you some questions. It's Doug in Arkansas. Go ahead, Doug.
Oh, thank you. Boy, and thank you, Andrew, for all your hard work and what all the your life that you've spent in this.
Thank you.
And thank you, Raylan, a little bit off topic, but thank you, Raylan, for giving that announcement. I don't live in that area, but that's kind of what people used to do, right? Radio and all that?
They used to
work with the communities and let people know what's going on. So I appreciate you doing that.
Well, what is so amazing is these fires in California, these are not normal fires. I'm a, you know, sixth generation here in the state. There has never, ever in the history of California since I've been alive, ever had fires like this. This one that's going on down there, my God, it is the biggest fire, I think, that's ever existed on the planet.
Wow.
At least that's what it appears to be. And so if it's going into, Glendale, if it's going into Glendale, I mean, that's literally getting right into populated Los Angeles.
Wow.
I mean, this is unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't have TV and I don't listen to radio news or anything, so I wasn't aware. There's a lot of things I miss, and I guess I don't miss them. But my questions regarding this were, and I'm kind of going back to the 911 thing, that one of the things that stands out that obvious to me is they want people to know, because I see three major theories. One, that planes were controlled and directed into the building. That there were explosives of some type in the building, that somebody with power and authority had to get involved there. We know that the fact that they pulled the planes off, the military planes off, that the government is involved. But, and then the third is this one here, that this using some type of technology. Do I get that right? Does that seem correct? I'm trying to understand this, but...
Yes, I think some type of new technology or possibly very old technology was used. Yes, carry on.
So all three do indicate that there's our governments involved, there's higher powers involved. Am I understanding that correct?
I think it's higher powers and the government are sort of complicit in the larger agenda.
So then they must, let me say this, and you contend that there are, that of, we'll say two of these anyway, or one of these theories or conspiracies or whatever they're called, that they seem to be involved in perpetuating this idea, which is a distraction from the truth, the factual truth. Is that correct?
I think, again, yes, that is correct. There's meant to be a sort of grassy knoll theory.
Okay.
Where, you know,
yeah,
people are drawn to it, but it's not actually the correct. If you keep studying the evidence, you'll find that the theory that most people are drawn to is not the correct one.
Okay. Thank you. And if there's these powers behind letting this information out, either the people involved in doing the research and bringing these other ideas about would you say they're all correct, that all three of these things happened?
No, I think some are clearly false. And, you know, I've explained some of the reasons for that.
Okay.
Earlier in the discussion, but I think, you know, if I may sort of jump to what I think is the question that you're asking, you know, why they're letting this out. You know, people say to me, well, Andrew, if what you're saying is true, you'd be dead, you know, so what you're saying can't be true because you're still alive. You know, we've seen those sorts of arguments made, and the fact that we are still alive and I'm here speaking to you means that somebody wants this information to come out. I think that's probably the thrust of what you're saying. Would that be right?
Yeah, and I appreciate you answering it that way, because of course I would see that even this what might be the actual cause of it is also being let out. So then it might mean that everyone involved in all three of these things, because I'm sorry, I missed part of your, I've been in and out working and haven't heard all of it. So you say there is complicity to cover up in some of these theories and the people involved in them.
Yes, I think what's happening is a mixture of things. Some people are actively complicit because they know what happened, and it is to do with energy. I have no doubt that that is correct now. And I think some people do know this very well, and they're actively helping to cover up what we've put on the table. And that's what I've documented in the book. That's a free download, or you can buy a paperback if you want one. But what I was going to say is, and this is something I actually talked about with Robert, one of the earlier callers, privately, you know, off air, that there is they have to let the information out, because if they have got this overall plan to get rid of a lot of people, the only way that they can do that in the wider scheme of things, perhaps, you know, it sounds sort of trite in some ways, but in the cosmic scheme of things, is if they get our consent to allow it to happen. So they have to let the information out. Sometimes they do it symbolically. I mean, you can go and look at the tarot card set, for example, and you can see that the Twin Tower symbols have a significance in tarot, and they have, you know, they look like the number 11, and a lot of people are, you know, 9-11 and all the significance with 11 everywhere. And I've watched a very interesting video by a chap called Rick Clay, or about a chap called Rick Clay, who lays out the symbology, and the symbology is all around us. In a lot of the logos, which are controlled by, you know, the sort of corporate entities. So a lot of the information is encoded, and some of it is in plain view when you actually see it. And I think there seems to be this idea of they have to allow some of this information out, and they have to encode some of it so that they get consent for doing what they're doing. In other words, they have to tell us that the swine flu is bad for us, you know, the swine flu vaccine, rather, is poisonous. But people will still take it, even though they've been told it's poisonous. They'll just not believe it. So that they're giving their consent to being damaged or killed by, you know, the people who are in control of everything.
I'm so glad that you brought that up, because that is a very important thing that people have to really understand. That there is a higher spiritual law coming from our Creator, that they cannot mess with us unless we give them our permission. And of course what they do is they trick us into giving our permission, just like they call a television program a program. So when you tune in the television program, you're giving your permission to be programmed by television.
I do agree with you, Mr. Johnson.
Yes,
that's right.
Exactly.
I agree with that. What you were saying there. So what comes to my mind is, why would they? If we couldn't do something about it, okay? And of course, waking up people is one thing, but as we know with so many things, you can get court cases won, but then there's nobody to enforce it.
Yes.
But along that line of thinking, then, they're letting us know, let's say because they have to, and as Raylan brought up, okay, maybe they have to because the creator, someone who's the boss, is saying, well, you have to let these people know because they have to willingly do it. Now, if that's what it's based upon, then there has to also be a remedy. And that's why I'm intrigued by this. I want to understand it correctly, and then so that I can figure out, okay, what's the remedy? Because knowing the truth... go ahead, Raylan.
Do you think that the thing you're calling the remedy, is that like a vaccine that's only for the elite or something?
No. What I mean is we would not be given the information, the awareness that they're doing this to us if we couldn't do something about it. Because otherwise, it would make no sense to whatever power is allowing this to just say, well, you have to let them know that they're dying, or that we're going to do this to them. That wouldn't make sense. There has to be something that we've been given the information so that we can do something about it. What do you think about that? That's the way I'm leaning there, and I'm trying to figure out, okay, what?
You're onto some of the core issues there, and I've said to people, well, we look at the technology that destroyed the towers, we look at all the history of these terrorist attacks and the bioweapons research, we've got, you know, nuclear arsenals which we know can destroy the planet, you know, 10 times over or whatever the figure is. So if there is this group that's controlling everything and controlling all the affairs, why haven't they released the viruses, set off all the nuclear weapons, or used all this advanced energy technology, which I suppose, to eradicate the rest of us? They could do it at the drop of a hat. So I agree with you that I think the fact that we're here and we're still discussing this means we must have a chance to turn things around. And the only way I know to do that is to make people aware of the topics that we're discussing and the evidence which proves that they are true and valid. You know, that's the only thing that I know I can do that's in my power.
Go ahead.
So just to finish that point, my view is that I'm trying to do that because it's within my power and I have the time and the facility to do that, so that's what I'm doing. And ultimately, whether it'll have any overall effect, I have no idea. But I don't like to predict the future. And if I was to say, well, you know, next Tuesday they are going to just kill everyone with some variant of swine flu, then why would I be doing this now? Why would I not be doing something else?
Yeah,
so I still think we're in with a chance. As black as things may look, I think we're still in with a chance.
Yeah, I don't really personally. It doesn't affect me that way. Just having work and putting food on the table and that's real enough. I love learning about these things. Because I think there is a remedy, and maybe it's just not here yet.
Maybe.
And I have one more question, or really it's an idea that I had. When you talked about the storm coming in, Aaron, that I never heard about, and then you talked about the cloud over that particular city, or that affected some building. I wasn't able to write this stuff down, but when you talked about that, I was thinking about, with the storm Aaron coming in near New York at the same time, do they have, do we know anything about, I just pictured a ship that would have this kind of technology that would have to be close enough, maybe, and cloaked in this thing, hidden in it, that it could do it. And then the other idea I had is in terms of spirits, that, you know, this actually represented a spirit that came in there to be, to have some effect on it. I know that you can't scientifically prove the spirit thing, but do they have ships that can do that type of thing? Is there any type of knowledge of, spacecraft or that type of thing with the weapons on them?
I think with the storm, I think, was, a hurricane by all rights as we recognize it. I mean, again, mentioned that if we could get Dr. Wood on, she would explain about the specific data that she's uncovered for the hurricane area, which I think is very important, because there are certain unusual characteristics, like it had an eye in the shape of a pentacle. But one of the characteristics of the shape of the storm is that it actually looks like something else. It looks like, and I should have said this earlier, it looks like what's called a Tesla coil. The shape of it looks like a Tesla coil. And the storm system has an electrical charge at the top, and then obviously we get electrical discharges both from cloud to cloud and from the cloud to the ground associated with storm systems. So one of the things that John Hutchinson used to use in an experiment is indeed a Tesla coil. So we've conjectured between us that this may have been part of the energy system which they were utilizing. So the storm, may simply have been an enabling factor in allowing the weapon to work as it did on 9/11. We know that they had clear blue skies, and I think that was needed so that they could monitor what was going on carefully and maybe tweak things if they needed to be tweaked. They needed a clear view.
Andrew, I just wanted to say, what about those planes that fly in the eye of a hurricane? Could there have been some flying vehicle in the eye of that hurricane that caused this?
I don't think so. We don't have any information one or the other. You know, I've tried to stay focused on what we can show as evidence.
Of course.
you know, and I obviously I've indulged in, you know, a good bit of conjecture here and there in the program, and I've tried to join a few things together, and I've tried to perhaps make some bridges that make the most sense to me, and they may not all be correct, you know, I'd fully accept that. But, you know, I don't know how the technology works in terms of the storm manipulation. It does indeed look very much like it was manipulated, but how it works, where they did it from, I think that's very much more difficult to answer with any accuracy.
Well,
I guess that was what I was wondering. I mean, if they did it with some, you know, exotic technology, where were they based? I mean, where was the machine based? That was what I was wondering.
Well, I think, you know, again, I can give you another kind of dot to look at and possibly connect. There's a series of YouTube-type videos, and it's called Far Above Space and Time. And these have been made by a chap called John Leonard Walson. And he has used some type of attachment to a 10-inch reflecting telescope, and he's made some sort of home videos, and he appears to have filmed these objects, which look like space platforms, and they're invisible under normal observation techniques, but he's worked out a way, I think, with some type of oscillating mirror, or he feeds the light through some type of processing unit, and he can actually see these objects floating in orbit. And again, you can see the YouTube videos and see what you make of them. So what is up in space? I mean, we don't know. We know a lot of secret shuttle missions have gone up that have been done for the military. I say a lot. I don't know how many. There's probably at least five that have gone up. We know that Vandenberg Air Force Base had its own launch facility, which was a space launch facility. I believe that was closed down a few years ago. I have a friend in the States who tells me that his father worked in the 50s and 60s and 70s on anti-gravity technology and space platforms. And he worked for Lockheed at that time. His father did. And I stayed with him, so I know him quite well. So we don't know exactly what technology is there, but we do have, you know, plenty of evidence to suggest that it's real. And that, I think, is the key in actually understanding what we're dealing with.
I'm gonna sign off. But I'd like to ask you, and thank you for answering my questions. Could you please give out the websites for yourself? And there was a Judy Wood and I think Morgan,
sure.
And then there was a Dr. Hudson.
Yeah, those are actually all posted in the reading room of Rumor Mill News. If
okay,
you go over
you.
There and you look for Andrew Johnson's name,
okay.
They're in that thread, and every single
yeah.
thing that we've been talking about has already been posted over there, so you'll find the links there.
Wonderful. That's why we need to support the micro effect.
No, that's why you need to support Rumor Mill News. It's our people that are doing
true.
That.
True.
But you have to support
them. Yeah,
you have to
correct.
Support both of us.
I stand corrected.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, we all do this work for free. I'm sure even you, Andrew, do it for free.
Yes.
I mean, we just pour, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars into everything that we try to do. We don't get any public funding like public radio gets funding.
No.
I did have an email from one of our listeners who took up on what Robert was saying about we need to create something positive that we can all join into. And I actually came up with a breathing earth. And if we could all sync our breath with this breathing earth, we might be able to, you know, I don't know, to join together with our power, you know, telepathically or whatever, to just side rail some of these things. And if you go to the reading room right now, the breathing earth was done by one of our listeners. I want to thank you for that. And we have a breathing earth that is breathing slow enough that you'll go into a nice little meditation as you breathe with it. And if we can just get that breathing earth up on every website in the world and have people take 2 minutes out of their day and breathe with the earth, it's just giving some energy back to the earth, but at the same time, it's joining together all of us who are doing this. I mean, what else can we do? Everything else that we've been doing doesn't seem to be effective. So we're trying something different. So, Andrew, you've got about 3 minutes before the show is over. What haven't we covered?
Well, I'm just trying to think. There's a number of topics on my website. I think one of the stories which has broken this week, which I found quite funny, really, is one of the topics I've put a bit about on my website, and I'm actually just trying to prepare an article about it, is the moon landings, which, of course, is talked about a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had this article published on a number of websites, and the mainstream media, BBC News, has published it, and it's about a moon rock which was given to a museum in Holland, I think it is.
Yes.
And they found that it was a fake.
I know, can you believe
that? It's a petrified wood.
Yeah, petrified wood, I saw that. And, I often wondered about all those moon rocks. Where are they? I mean, the only thing that can really prove that we've ever been to the moon are those moon rocks. And so one of them turns out to be petrified wood. Extraordinary. And, you know, I just got an article that I'm going to post, and the title of it is, Can Nicotine Block Lethal Swine Flu Cytokine Storm? And a cytokine storm is when the body's defense mechanism gets into an overstimulatory loop. And the man who wrote the first article on the cytokine storm said that the three shots that we're going to be taking, the third one will end up creating this cytokine storm. But anyway, there's someone else who thinks nicotine can block the lethal swine flu cytokine storm. And, of course, we know our governments never do anything good for us, so why have they banned cigarettes? You know,
good
even...
question.
Yeah. And
same here. We've had a smoking ban in the UK in the last 18 months, so yeah.
Well, I'm beginning to think everybody should start smoking cigarettes right at the moment and get enough nicotine in their system. Maybe this really is true. You know, we never know. You know, on the Internet, we never know if it's real or if it's Memorex, as the old commercial used to say. Well, Andrew, you said that you have your telephone number right there on the website, and if people have Skype, they can just call you up, can't they?
Well, they can find me on Skype. They can find my email address. You know, I'll try and answer any emails. I haven't got my telephone number, like, you know, listed on the contact page, but if you have a punt around some of the articles and whatnot, you'll find it, you know, quite easily. You know, I'm fairly easy to get hold of. I don't generally hide away, so if people do want to get hold of me.
And we've got your website posted on Rumor Mill News. And as you can hear the music, it's the end of our hour. So I want to thank you, Andrew, for being a guest here on Rumor Mill News Radio on the Micro Effect Broadcast Network.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. And I will be back tomorrow.